Zaxby's, famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, 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 don't win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome in, everyone, to the latest edition of the Bulldogs Extra Podcast. It's South Carolina week. Georgia coming off a big road win at Tennessee, 43-14. They covered the spread, so it was just as we all thought it would go. Right, Ryan?
Yeah, there might have been a drip of sweat or two out in Las Vegas after Tay Crowder recovered a fumble, ran it in for a touchdown on a, couldn't have been a better hit. Couldn't have been a more perfect hit by Stokes to knock that ball out, but it sent the score from 22 points, I believe, to 29, and an easy cover for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I don't think that's why Kirby and Mary Beth Smart were celebrating in the stands with fans afterwards.
Well, they had big money on it.
I don't think that was the case. I think they were just happy to see what turned out to be a runaway win where they could even bring in some of the reserves, some of the backups after, like you said, getting pushed in the first half. I want to just let you all know out there that I am playing hurt like Eric Stokes did against Notre Dame. He came in for the final drive. I got a little bit of a cold. That's why Ryan did the honors of that incredible Zaxby's read at the top
take.
Of the podcast.
One take.
Expectations now for the 5-0 team, third ranked in the country. If there's a game for a couple quarters like it was against Tennessee, you wonder what's going on. I think with the way that they shut down the Tennessee offense in the second half, the run game gave up 70 yards, the defense did, Jake Fromm was spectacular in terms of completion percentage. He's now up to third in the nation, 77.5,
yeah, I believe. Yeah.
Percent. We made the drive back from Knoxville just in time for Ryan to watch his Braves on Sunday.
Yeah, man.
Now, if Ryan seems a little distracted during this podcast, I'll have you know it might be because first pitch of the Braves Monday game here.
Well, yeah.
It's starting very soon.
Right now as we speak, my phone just clicked from 2:59 to 3 o'clock, and I'm guessing the Braves are starting first pitch in 5 minutes or so. So let's get this wrapped up.
All right. Thanks for joining the Bulldogs Extra. Oh, wait, no. I guess not. We got to talk a little bit. All right. Hey, by the way, my Nats are facing elimination tonight. Let's hope when we do our podcast on Thursday, maybe we'll be talking about a Braves Nationals National League
and,
Championship Series matchup.
I can't decide what I want. I mean, this inner Atlanta sports fan inside of me fears that the Braves will match up with the Nationals and get clobbered. And, after dominating the NL East the past 2 years, wouldn't that be an ultimate slap in the face that your Nats end up going to the World Series over the Braves? But then again, you think, well, the Braves and the Dodgers, not looking too good for the Braves there.
All right, meanwhile, my Redskins lost to the Patriots and then fired Jay Gruden this morning.
Yeah.
I haven't checked it. You said it's 3 o'clock. Is Dan Quinn still the Falcons coach?
I don't know. I know a lot of people out there wish he wouldn't be because it's been ugly this year for the Atlanta Falcons.
All right, fans showed up in force again. The Georgia contingent, I guesstimated about 33%. The announced crowd at Neyland Stadium was over 90,000, so about 10,000 or so empty seats at least. We'll talk about what we saw in Knoxville this matchup this week with South Carolina and what issues need to be addressed this week for Georgia. First, it's probably important to talk about Halloween being 3 weeks from Thursday. Ryan, I don't know if you saw former Georgia offensive lineman Isaiah Wynn had an important tweet. He referred to candy corn as a, quote, horrible and detrimental candy and used the hashtag stop candy corn. Now, where do you fall on this all-important issue?
Oh, it's awful. I cannot stand candy corn. And I don't know if it's so much the taste, but the texture. It just gets all grimy in my mouth. I never have been a fan of it. Are you on the candy corn bandwagon of liking it?
No, I don't like candy corn. It's probably one of my least favorite candies. I don't eat too much candy anyway. Give me some pumpkin pie. Usually about mid.
That's not candy.
I know. I just sweet though, sort of.
I got you.
About mid October, it's if somebody wants to send us in a pumpkin pie, that's fine. basically from mid-October to right after Thanksgiving is pumpkin pie season. Haven't had any pumpkin lattes or anything like that yet this season. I mean, it's 80 degrees outside today, so I'm not ready for that. But no, candy corn is definitely a no-go. We'll talk about kind of what we should be putting in trick-or-treaters' bags as we get closer to that weekend. But candy corn should not be on there.
I mean, where do you fall on the pumpkin pie, pecan pie aisle? I mean, you're not from the South, so to speak.
They're both delicious.
Okay, so you are pecan pie.
Yeah.
I love some pecan pie.
I'm not very discerning in that regard. I'll take either of those. If you want to do a half pecan, half pumpkin, that's good also.
And then throw in an apple pie, too. I mean, that's good stuff as well. Not so high on the apple?
Hmm. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, I like, I'm not too big on the, I like all types of pies, I guess what I'm saying. Key lime.
I will say this, and we probably talked too much about what they serve in the Georgia press box, but we are coming up with two more home games back to back now with the South Carolina game this week, noon kick. And
Kentucky
will either be a 3:30 or 6 p.m. kickoff, mm-hmm. They announced today. Really not that many great choices for CBS that weekend after this one. But Claude Felton and the fine folks at Georgia, they often bring out the turkey cranberry / pumpkin pie lunch for a game. But now they do it not too close to Thanksgiving because they know you're going to have too much. So, I'm guessing it might be next week.
This coming week the Kentucky.
Although they do have a couple of November games, right?
Yeah. Well, they have. They have the A&M is the week before Thanksgiving, but that might be Thanksgiving overload if they put that on our play. I don't think Claude has the Claude doesn't pick the menu.
I think he's very influential in every aspect of media services, and that would be one.
I don't know what all the other places do. I know George's catered by their UGA food services.
Well, he doesn't cook it, but he does get to choose.
I get that. Okay. So does he have like a spreadsheet in front of him and he's like marking down?
I don't have all the details, but I know he's all powerful in that regard.
Whatever. What was the highlight always when you go to Knoxville, and we got to enjoy that this past week, was the cooler full of ice cream sandwiches.
I did not partake in
that. I did ice cream sandwich and a frozen Snicker bar.
All right, enough of the media and the food. Why don't we talk Georgia football, and we'll do that in a second. But first, I want to remind you, don't forget to shoot us a review at the Apple Podcasts or in the Google Podcasts app. And I just checked again the other day, and amazingly, we still have all 5-star reviews. And I begged some of you to give us a 2-star because Ryan's letting it go to his head. But Ryan keeps talking about wanting a 5-star review.
Yeah, give us a 5-star review and click that subscribe button while you're there.
Go ahead, leave a comment as well. And hey, it's a Bulldog Extra podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, Georgia's 43-14 victory on paper looks pretty spectacular, but Georgia fans had to watch a couple of touchdown passes by a true freshman quarterback, Brian Maurer, including an explosive 73-yard touchdown from Marquez Callaway. So Georgia's got some experience in the secondary in senior safety J.R. Reed, junior safety Richard LeCount, but they both were kind of on the wrong side of those touchdown passes. LeCount bit on a double move from Callaway. J.R. Reed was kind of in a difficult one-on-one matchup with Jawan Jennings, right there on a spread formation. What's your take? How concerning? This is all with Tyson Campbell out because of a foot injury, and then Georgia's gave up some big plays on a bust in particular on the first one.
Well, here's the thing, and what was the second half total? I mean, they fixed their problems, came out in the second half, and it's always remarkable to me to see the changes they make and the adjustments, and I think you saw a totally different Georgia defense there, especially in the secondary in the second half, and they pretty much just put a stop to anything Tennessee was trying to do. And I think Kirby said after the game that, you know, a lot of teams will go to the same plays that have been working. Well, they figured that out and put a stop to it. And you know, I think it was DJ Daniel was the cornerback on the double move as well. Is that who that was? And it looked like he bit on a play fake.
Yeah, he bit on a play action. Yeah.
And then so did LeCount on that same play. But I don't think it's concerning at all. I, you know, it's things that the coaching staff makes adjustments to. They, you know, see a thing. And you know, the way they played in the second half and 33 straight points that Georgia put up and pretty much just stopped anything Tennessee was trying, except on maybe that last drive with backup Santa. I don't think it's concerning at all. I think they'll be just fine in the secondary.
All right, here's where I disagree. Joe Burrow and LSU, Tua and Alabama, and a bunch of NFL receivers on the Crimson Tide. Georgia's going to see one of them in December, one of those teams, if they can get by Florida. And I think Georgia needs to be more sound on the back end. It's not... look, you're kind of looking for things with this Georgia team. I mean, they're crushing everyone except for Notre Dame when they did what they needed to do to get a top 10 win at home. But they haven't faced... I was pretty impressed with what I saw from Tennessee's wideouts, even through their sloppy 1-3 start.
Well, they've got a good... good quorum.
Yeah, but... you know, Campbell, I mentioned, hasn't played since the Arkansas State game. And Kirby Smart did not sound necessarily overly optimistic he's going to play this week. He said basically we'll have to check it out, see what it looks like by the end of the week. So I'm putting him in the questionable range. You know, DJ Daniels been in there, and he's been targeted.
Yeah, absolutely. Did Stevenson play much the other day? We didn't see him much. Or
I think it was more late in the game.
Yeah, and the other guy slipping my mind right now. He didn't.
Tyreek McGee.
Yeah. Well, McGee. You know, I noticed McGee. They threw in at safety one time when LeCount's helmet came off and he had to come out of the game, and they threw Tyreek McGee in at safety at that spot, and not, I don't know, Lewisine or somebody like that would come in, but. Yeah, I think getting Tyson back will be good and you know, give them that depth back that they need in the secondary.
All right, Georgia's run defense played without Jordan Davis for all but the first two snaps of the game, but they did fine. I mean, Tennessee rushing totals were 29 for 70 yards, and a lot of that was on the last drive of the game when the game was already out of reach. So you had Michael Barnett step up. You had Julian Rochester play for the first time all year. Devontae Wyatt obviously chips in as well in some of the run defense. And Kirby said that they didn't really miss a beat in that regard. But, you know, Davis is a mountain of a man. He was seen by one of the reporters today. He's still in a walking boot. So we'll see. You know, I mean, I don't think you need to push him back out there. It's not like you're playing, like Georgia's favored by 24-ish again.
I think it was
something like that
around there.
You know, you have Kentucky next week. You want Davis to be ready to go for Florida. Now, I definitely would expect him back for Kentucky. You know, I just don't know if you need to push it a week after. So we'll see how that plays out. Kirby was talking about the tackling a little bit today. And if you watch some of the game, you know, on replay as I did, I haven't watched the second half yet. But, you know, they had some issues there. Monty Rice in particular looked like he was out of position and missing some tackles. Late in the second quarter, they missed about six tackles on a short pass to Juwan Jennings, again with Monty Rice involved. What do you see in that regard?
Well, you know, something I've thought about is they're upping the havoc rate, right? They're trying to up the havoc rate. How much of that is them trying to go for that turnover instead of just making a tackle? And I've thought about that anytime that they have a guy stood up or something, they're trying to rip the ball out instead of just taking him down. And while the havoc rate is something good, you know, you want to force turnovers and stuff, it does seem to hurt on that backside of tackling. That's what I've been thinking about every time, you know, it seems like somebody's missing a tackle or they have somebody stood up and he gains three or four more yards after contact and all. I've just thought, well, maybe they're focused too much on forcing a turnover and all that type of stuff.
That's interesting. I don't know if I saw it necessarily that way, but it could be. It's something probably worth exploring more with the players. Ask them if that, you know, if that's in their mental frame of mind and you know, if that's costing them in terms of some of the basic fundamentals. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, a guy who broke a lot of tackles, and one player in particular was Brian Herrien. I think I counted four tackles he broke on an impressive first half run.
Yes. Then gave a little juke move, I think, about 10, 15 yards in and went a lot further. That was a heck of a run.
Yeah, so Georgia's running game, I mean, DeAndre Swift is clearly the featured back. Zamir White, he didn't play against Notre Dame, but got more carries.
I think 7 for
this
70
game,
somewhere.
But I think Kerryon was at 11 carries this game. So, you know, James Cook, it seems like more of a guy that they line up in the slot, use him on speed sweeps. He's not necessarily, you know, it seems like those top three guys in particular are going to kind of be their bread and butter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess James has kind of fallen into that thing we thought he would, which is kind of a slot guy more than a running back. And, yeah, they use him for speed sweeps. They never try to go up the middle with him. But you have a bruiser like Zamir going up through there. And Brian here, is such a patient runner. I think we had even talked about it in the press box the other day, some about just how he waits for his hole to open up. And, you know, he's a different type of back than the rest, but he's definitely physical. And it was very good to see. And you know, Kirby's been asked a lot about him lately and about the patience, I guess you'd call, that he stuck around and stuff. And I even asked him earlier today on Monday about, you know, if that's a guy you kind of root for a little more because of him sticking it out. Of course, Kirby said that he pulls for all the guys, and how, you know, Brian's contributed all 4 years here, but it does seem like he's getting a little more opportunity this year and taking full advantage of it.
Georgia's offensive line, we talk about them so much, and I don't know, you want to give them credit for only giving up one sack all year, which I think might lead the nation still. But Jake Fromm has to get a lot of credit for that as well. Just, you know, gets rid of the ball instead of getting sacked. In particular, there was one play in the first half where, you know, I believe the pocket was collapsing on him, and he dumped it off pretty fast. And then, you know, the great pass protection on that play, he had so much time on that pass to DeAndre Swift on the sideline, turned into a 44-yard gain. But, you know, that wasn't a play that they drew up, I don't think.
Yeah, that was I believe somebody said that was a background or backyard playground type of play where he, but I mean, I think what made it easier was how wide open Swift was down the sideline. And yeah, he just threw it up and DeAndre did the rest. But yeah, the offensive line is definitely giving him time and allowing him to kind of pick apart the defense and get down to his third or fourth read, which always seems to be a guy open for him to hit real quick. But I think it's a combination of both. It's the line giving him time to read, and then when he feels that pressure coming in on him, he always makes a good decision, and that's how you complete 77.5% of your passes.
Yeah, that play I was talking about with Fromm was a situation where it was an empty backfield, and he unloaded it. It turned out to be short of the first down, but he totally, you know, he definitely avoided what would have been a sack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jake left the post-game interview on Saturday night in the bowels of Neyland Stadium, actually in the same interview room where Mark Richt, I believe maybe in 2013, cut his hand on like a metal part of a chair that was sticking out. So Richt did that post-game interview as blood kind of oozed out of his hand.
What's bigger, that post-game interview room or this room we're in right now, the studio room?
No, that's a little bit bigger.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, I don't even think that's the worst of the places in the SEC in terms of little tight spaces to do those post-game. I'll have to think about that and come up with a list for future.
I also remember that I believe that was where Richt got his 100th victory as a Bulldog. Does that sound right? In 2011?
Yeah, I believe it was. Maybe Drew Butler was on that team.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I remember that celebration, though.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I bring that up is he finished up his interviews, and then Jake Fromm sang Rocky Top as he left the interview room. Dylan Weber of Dog Post captured that. I was actually, I think Jake left, was leaving the room, and I was turning around trying to get maybe an interview with Aziz Ojulari. So I didn't actually hear the singing, but I saw the clip that I guess went viral.
Yeah, I didn't make much of it. A lot of people did, but is that a troll job? I mean, people said that's a troll job.
No, I think it's Jake.
You hear it so much throughout the game. I mean, it's just stuck in your head.
I think he's thinking that's it. I mean, he's not playing back there in Tennessee, so he was
that is true.
Trying to savor his last game there. And 41-0 the first time, and then 43-14. So pretty good memories he will have of playing there. You know, speaking of the pass protection, Justin Schaefer at left guard held up pretty well. Obviously, you know, Solomon Kinley was available, and they could have called on him if needed, like they did with Isaiah Wilson against Notre Dame. But he never got in the game, and that bodes well for Justin Schaefer, who, given what Georgia has talent wise with Andrew Thomas, mm-hmm. with Solomon Kinley, with Isaiah Wilson, maybe even Ben Cleveland, a lot of these guys are going to be going to the NFL after this year. And Schaefer's a guy that, you know, pretty soon he's going to go back into a backup role, I would guess. And then, but, you know, getting the kind of type of experience will pay off next year.
Yeah. And of course, you think of, you know, Georgia, and I think Kirby was asked about Cade Mays moving to left guard, you know, and Cleveland at right guard, but had no need for that. And Schaefer's getting a lot of experience. And of course, you keep thinking about Georgia stacking that offensive line every year. And there's Schaefer's kind of a forgotten guy, I feel like, with all the five stars and whatnot they've stacked up. So good for him for coming in and holding his own, because he's done a good job in place of Solomon.
I don't believe Jay Camarda's name came up in the post-game press conference with Kirby, and he did not come up again.
I wasn't going to ask it again. I know that.
Did not come up again today in Kirby's 20-minute or so session before the South Carolina game. But worth noting that he had another poor punt on the first one against Tennessee. They had the ball at the 42-yard line, and obviously a situation to try to pin him, you know, close to the goal line, but it didn't work out that way. Went out of bounds and turned into, what was it, 17 yards?
Yeah, 17, 18, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so Camarda came back. Looks like he had a 53-yarder on the second punt.
Well, he got a bounce, too, out of that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So, clearly, Bill Rubright is the backup. He made the trip. But Georgia's obviously sticking with Jake. You know, I guess that's their best option. I know a lot of fans are hoping that I think can get worked out.
I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know. That, you know, I don't know if Rubright, however you say it, is the guy. You know, if he was better, he'd be in there. So I guess, you know, and I, from what I gathered from asking a couple of players about that, is that they see it all the time in practice. He has a heck of a leg, Camarda, that is, and so, you know, I guess that's they hope that maybe it's a mental thing. Sometimes he just gets nervous. I don't know what it is, but he needs to fix it soon. I know that.
All right, it's Mark Weiser with Ryan Dennis from the Athens Banner-Herald and Online Athens, and this is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, important update for Ryan. This is not going to kind of have much staying power, such much relevancy as you listen to this, whatever that might be. But bottom of the first, Braves Cardinals tied at zero still. So, Ryan, I thought this might be a good time to read the NCAA football rules manual, and we'll go over every rule, you know, line by line. With any, what, you not interested in that?
Well, I'm gonna go watch the Braves. So you can finish that and tell everybody what's in the handbook.
All right, we won't do that. We'll wrap up with a couple of items that have piqued my interest and get your take on this, Ryan. Hey, Georgia basketball got not one but two commitments. The men's team, Tom Crean's, out of Eastern Florida Junior College. That'll be forward Jonathan Ned and guard Mikal Starks. And my first thought was, is that a relative of John Starks? No, I don't know the answer to that yet, because this came out right before Kirby's press conference, mm-hmm. and I haven't had time to check. But I did pull up John Starks' Wikipedia, the former New York Knicks star, and did not see any mention of Mr. Mikal Starks. So Kirby clearly trying to Tom Crean clearly trying to work on the 2020 class in terms of look, Edwards is going to be a one and done. Mm-hmm. We know that. This is already a very young team with a bunch of freshmen. What is it, six or seven? And they have the grad transfer as well that came in from Northeastern. So some veteran guys, some older guys that will come into the program next year, and maybe we'll learn a little bit more about these guys later on. But on the basketball front, Georgia's added a musical guest to the Friday Night Stegmania. And Ryan, I mentioned to you, I believe, the other day that this Blanco Brown, who has a hit song called The Get Up, Ryan was unfamiliar with him. He did not know Mr. Brown's work, so I played it to him as we were driving to Knoxville, I believe it was.
Yes, and I mean, the rap expert that you are, you came through.
Well, I guess you'd classify him as rap, but...
It has that Lil Nas X feel to it. It has a little country in it.
Right.
That I didn't know about.
Now, I believe Brown played the U.S. Open Kids Day, which I saw this event on the television. And very family-friendly, his song. A nice little dance going on with it.
So you're saying no... there won't be any Kansas-like... Snoop Dogg.
Right, so I think this one works out for the Midnight Madness like event, because at Kansas they had Snoop Dogg over the, I think it was Friday night, and Snoop brought stripper poles, dancers, and
I like how you call them dancers.
A money, just strippers. Yeah,
I don't know.
And a money gun shooting bills out.
All the stuff that a program under the close eye of the NCAA should be doing, right? I mean, that's not thinking it out.
Now, will there be apologies coming from Georgia after Blanco Brown? I mean, I know there was that incident at the first G-Day with Kirby when the rider for Ludacris got out, and the, that didn't work out with the condoms and the alcohol.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be good this weekend. You'll see basketball. The women's team's there. I don't know if the women's team does the Kansas event. I didn't learn that. Maybe if the women's team did the Kansas event, they might have checked out Snoop Dogg's what his entertainment plans were a little bit more thoroughly.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know how Kansas does it, but I don't expect any controversy out of Georgia's Stagmania.
All right, Georgia and Ohio State are tied at number 3 in the AP poll this week, which means absolutely nothing.
We're back to football now, by the way.
Yeah, this is kind of what we've been talking about most of the time, but. So what does that mean? I vote in AP poll. I have Georgia 3. I have Ohio State 4. I moved Ohio State up, I believe, from like 5 or 6 a couple of weeks ago. Ohio State with a win over Michigan State this past week. Do you think Georgia Ohio State will leapfrog Ohio State, Georgia in the poll this week? And does it matter?
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. No, I mean, if Georgia keeps winning, they'll be in the playoffs. If Ohio State keeps winning, they will be in the playoffs, because Georgia would have to beat, say, an Alabama in the SEC championship. It'll all work itself out. It's not important right now. People lose their lids over Kirk Herbstreit's ranking every week because he has Ohio State first, it's his alma mater, and keeps Georgia at number 5 or 6, and it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at this point, because everybody will play who they need to play, and it'll work out where the best 4 teams are in.
Speaking of Ohio State and Georgia and the rest of the top 25 teams, as well as some teams not in the top 25, you can do the picks contest we have. Go to onlineathens.com, check out the contest button. Ryan, what are you doing? You getting an update on the Braves score?
Nope. I was actually looking for this week's winner, if I can find it. I think it was a repeat winner, in fact. But congratulations to whoever that winner is. I have lost it somewhere deep. I got it right here. G. Adcock, congratulations on winning. I believe it's your second time this year winning. From Bogart, Georgia, we do appreciate you participating and winning again. So congratulations.
All right, we'll talk to you guys Thursday. We'll dive into South Carolina in depth then, as we break down Saturday's game, and Zaxby's with hand-breaded chicken, fresh-made salads, and sauces from mild to wild. Stop by today.